This episode of the Jandanaut is brought to you by Beer 52, the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club.
Why can't friends be kind of like the key to the door that unlocks more experiences in love with other people?
That's Erica Berger, a journalist who sent an email to 700 people asking to be set up.
We're talking about what role our friends can play in our love lives on this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. We're your hosts. I'm Nasran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman, and this week we explore one of the coolest, bravest stories I've heard.
I think that we're so quick to ask, how's work going? But we don't really ask in an authentic way, how are you feeling in love and with love?
Hey everyone, welcome to the Gender Knot. I'm going to give you a quick rundown in case you're new. This is the podcast where we try to figure out gender roles for our modern era. So each week we take a dilemma or a question around gender and we see if we can untangle it a little bit, shed some light on it, maybe even come to a solution of sorts if possible. So I'm Naz, I'm a journalist, I'm based in London. My co-host is Jonathan. He's worked in business, tech, in politics, and he's now in DC. How's it going?
It's going. I am currently outside on American University's quad. I guess it's a quad. And it is lovely, and it is outside, and it may rain soon, so we have to not be too long. This week, we're delving into a fun but challenging topic, dating and whether or not our friends help or don't. But here first, we want to hear from our sponsor.
Beer 52, the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club. For our UK listeners, how would you like a free case of craft beer? By visiting beer52.com/gender, you can get just that. As a listener of our show, we'd like to thank you with the help of our friends at Beer 52. Now, Beer 52 search the world for incredible, exclusive, small batch craft beers, and they bring these to members. Every month focuses on a new country or theme, and they focused on craft beers from Belgium, Amsterdam, California, and Norway. If you sign up now, you can try a case of their best British beers as part of their Summer Bangers selection for free. That's 8 of Britain's best craft beers. All you need to do is pay £2.95 for postage. Head over to beer52.com/gender. That's beer52.com/gender. Those are the numbers 5 and 2. So again, for a case of 8 of Britain's best craft beers for free, head to beer52.com/gender. So, Jonathan, we're catching you while you're trying to finish up your doctoral dissertation. How's that going?
We have definitely ended up in a dark, dark place.
How dark is dark?
Dark is dark enough that I had to watch Twilight last night to distract myself.
Wait, this is like a teen girl thing, no? I'm not across
yes, it's,
these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always forget you are not the pop culture maven. but I have been often commented that I have the romantic inclinations of a teenage girl. And so I'm owning it, embracing it. It is a little weird for a grown adult man to be doing this, but as I said, dark times. But speaking about dark times, we should probably tell our listeners about why they are not going to be hearing part two of the Robert Kandel tape that we had mentioned last week.
So last week we talked to Rob Kandel on male shame. It was a really good conversation. Basically, we were meant to play you part two this week, but we're kind of going to sit on it a little bit and see how we feel. It was a bit of a tricky conversation. It was initially meant to be just Rob and Jonathan. They really wanted me to join, and I found it quite hard to listen, to be honest. So it's a bit tricky because male shame is a huge problem and men need to be able to explore that, and I want men to be able to explore that. But then male shame also has a massive, I mean, shame in general has a massive impact on everyone else. I think a lot of men's shame kind of gets taken out on women, and I think men need to hear that as well. But then it's a bit tricky because it's like, by speaking up about that, is that in turn shaming men? Rob had said that men are shamed for talking about their shame, and that is an issue, but yeah, at the same time, I don't know, me as a woman in that conversation, it feels like quite a tricky place to be because you kind of want to speak up about the problems, that's important, but then does that shut down the conversation? I don't know. And it reminds me of when I spoke to Esther Perel and she was saying how both parties induce silence in each other, because then being told that speaking up about it is shaming is also silencing. So anyway, it's all very complicated. To be honest, I've been feeling quite upset about the whole situation, like not really knowing what to do. So
yeah, I'd like to point out in a self-aggrandizing way that I think it's important to note how supportive I was. And of course, you know, it's just like a man to be taking credit for a small achievement. But seriously, though, I mean, I think it's important to remind everyone who's listening in that, you know, a lot of these episodes, you know, we're dealing with some serious stuff. And, you know, we all, you, me, everyone, have to kind of work our way through it, process it and whatnot in our own way, and make sure that we're being not just honest to the audience, but honest to ourselves, most importantly. Mm. And so, you know, I mean, for instance, there was the one instance where I think it's the only time I can think of where I gave you like a strong, hard no that I was not okay, which was on the topic of incels, which is involuntary celibates, for those of you that don't know. And it's a topic that you were really intrigued in, and I just did not feel comfortable with the topic in general, because it's just a number of different issues around it, political, not political, not saying in any way that it's not an important issue, but I, both when you asked and even right now, I do not have kind of the emotional wherewithal to kind of work through it to be able to, I think, do it in honest justice for the topic. And, you know, most of my emotional trauma is dealing very specifically with the doctoral dissertation. So I want to devote those energies where the suffering may be done in the appropriate manner.
We might come back to the second part of male shame. We need to sit on it a little bit. It still feels a bit too raw, for me at least, right now. And a bit too confusing as to, you know, how to do it justice, how to allow men to speak, but also, you know, how to create a situation where basically everyone can be heard and no one feels silenced.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Back to dating.
So this week we are looking at love and relationships. We want to know what role friends play in our love lives. So, Jonathan, have you ever had any friends set you up? Or do you have any crazy dating stories?
The craziest dating story that I can actually laugh about is the one where I asked out a woman, and it was a little complicated because she was getting married the evening I was asking her out for.
Did you know that? Wait, I had no idea.
I literally had no idea she was engaged. I didn't know she was dating anyone. That's why I asked her out on the date. But she literally said, I was like, hey, you know, I'm in town. Would you like to go out? And she's like, you know, normally I would love to, but I'm getting married that evening. And I was like, that is not the response I was counting on.
But it's a pretty good excuse. I mean, it's better
than
washing my hair.
It's a fantastic excuse. I mean, like, it's I don't even think it was an excuse. I think she genuinely got married. But I mean, though, in fairness, if she was not getting married, that would be an epic, epic excuse.
Dude, that would be. Dude,
kind
can
of
you
like
check
that's
it
an
out?
Epic blow off. I did. I mean, I saw that there were photos and whatnot after because we're Facebook friends. But I mean, that would be an epic blow off. I mean, that would be such a fantastic blow off. I would kind of feel fantastic about it. But speaking of blow offs. Our friend Erica Berger, your friend Erica Berger, I should say. Hopefully someday my friend Erica Berger, because she's just sounded great.
Yeah, so our guest this week is Erica Berger. She is a journalist. She hosts the TBD podcast, as in To Be Determined, which is a really cool podcast. You should check it out. She talks to artists, entrepreneurs, activists about how to live through uncertainty. So do check that out.
She needs to talk to doctoral students.
So in October of 2016, I received an interesting email from her. And I later found out that she'd sent this to 700 people. And she had asked us all to set her up. So she sent this really, really intentional and very beautiful email talking about what kind of person she is, a bit about her personality, the sort of guy she would like to meet and to have a relationship with. It was really in-depth and it was also really fun. So she included a soundtrack to listen to while reading the email, and also a Pinterest board of guys she finds attractive, or a dude board, as she put it. And so, yeah, she was just saying that, like, you know, I've turned 30 and I would still like to be in a relationship. If there's anyone you think who would suit me, set me up. I'm up for that. And so she sent that out. And then a year later, she followed up with, you know, what happened over the year. So basically, she went on 6 dates due to the email. And what was interesting was that these dates were all set up by the people that she knew the least well of the people she'd sent the email to. So she talked to me about the theory of weak social ties. It's a 1973 Stanford paper on this. And there's actually a lot of there's a lot of research into this, how in the world of work and business, often the people we know the least well are the most important when it comes to getting our sort of job opportunities and stuff. So Eric has written a lot about this, and we've linked to her pieces in the notes to this show. She was in town recently and I wanted to chat to her. Before I met up with her, I sent these two emails to you, Jonathan, and also to our co-producers, Sam and Johnny.
I thought it was very interesting that Johnny made the comment about the fact that if a man had sent that email, it would have been seen and taken as desperate.
But he thought it was super cool that she sent it. He was like, this is a modern woman.
I thought it was super cool that she sent it. I mean, I thought, you know, she was really clearly stating her intention in a very respectful and appreciative way of everything. It wasn't, she wasn't bemoaning anything. She was just like, hey, here's where I'm at and here's what I'm looking for. And if any one of you can help me along my journey, thank you very much. And if you can't, thank you very much. And that was it. Some of the responses that she mentioned, like, were astounding to me. Like the fact that some people were saying, oh, you're desperate, or, you know, you're, I mean, like, it's that standard rule we all learned when you were kids, you know, like, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything.
I feel like we do this a lot in other aspects of our lives, like, I don't know, a work thing. Hey, can anyone help me out with this or that? So it's interesting that we tend to not do this with our love lives. And it seems like such an obvious thing, like, why don't you ask people who know you well if they can help you out with this thing? It's a very obvious thing that we should be doing that we don't. Have you set anyone up or been set up by a friend?
I have set up a couple of people. You know, I mentioned that I, you know, called up a good friend of mine who's going through a relatively rough divorce. And, you know, he was like, you know, but I'm still really looking for somebody. It's complicated, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I mean, I'd really like to be in a relationship. And so I called him up. I said, you know, I have three fantastic women. They're all in different stages of life, age, career, so on and so forth. But all are certainly looking for a partner. And, you know, the first question he asked was, well, why aren't you dating them? And, you know, I mean, I knew the question was coming. I knew he was going to ask it. It's a very kind of guy code of, like, what is wrong with these women, or, you know, like, so on and so forth.
The interesting thing, though, is that I find I've always really clicked with friends of friends really well. Like, whenever that situation, no one set me up, but whenever it's happened, and it's happened quite a few times, it's always been, like, a really good click, which kind of makes sense.
I think of this sort of fear of drama that Erica sort of references. I think it's really sad. This is one of the reasons why I tend to think that a lot of people seem to shy away from fixing up people.
This season, we are looking at men in relationships and women at work, because you're looking for a wife and I'm looking to build an empire.
On that quest,
I spoke to Erica when she was in London recently and we had a bit of a chat about all this. So here it goes. We wanted to talk about, what role do friends play in our relationships or love lives? And what is interesting is, in when you sent out your email asking to be set up, you said that it was the people who weren't necessarily close friends. They were the people who set you up.
Yeah, so let me give you a little bit of context. I sent an email in 2016, 2 weeks after my 30th birthday, to 700 people. And I chose the 700 from Facebook. At the time, I had about 4,000 friends. Again, for context, I went to a large high school, I went to a very large university, and I've lived in three of the largest cities in America. So that's why I emailed that many people. It was only a fifth of my friend group, essentially. And I had read a Stanford study that came out in the 70s, all about the theory of weak social ties. And the study posited that it's not our first degree connections or even our second degree, but it's the third degree connections that we have in our lives who make the largest difference. When I moved to New York originally, I moved and only let my friends in Los Angeles know 10 days before I moved. It was kind of a last minute decision. And I was sent emails describing my adventures, which also included dating, for the first year, every 2 or 3 weeks, in an effort to get them to come visit me. And it worked. 75% of them came and visit within the first year. But I started talking about dating more publicly, like, when I was 22. And my first job, I was researching whether or not to launch a dating site for this media company. And so I joined dating sites early. I joined them in 2009. And so when it came time for me to email 700 people asking to get set up, it didn't feel as uncomfortable as it might feel for many people. I think that's worth noting. when people received the email, I had about 4 different responses. The first was, good for you. This is very gutsy. We wish you the best. The second was, what the heck is wrong with you? If you try so hard, you're not going to find what you want, etc., etc., etc. You can imagine some of the things people said. The third response was, I salute you. I wish I knew someone for you. And the fourth response was, hey, take a look at these Facebook profiles or these LinkedIn profiles, or I've got some people for you. And what was interesting about the subset of people that responded in the fourth way were that they were the people I mostly felt wildly uncomfortable sending the email to. So it's not that I felt comfortable sending an email to 700 people. It's that I felt comfortable asking for help in dating, but probably 200 or 300 of them I felt like it was a bit of a stretch and I was going to leave an impression on them that I wasn't going to be able to control. Huh. And I took that risk. It is about control. And I had decided that love and relationships by the time I was 30 was worth taking a risk and taking a hit on my ego for. I don't think I would have done it when I was like 25. And so it was the people who I felt most uncomfortable sending the email to that ultimately were the ones who felt the most comfortable setting me up.
It's interesting because I received your email and I had 2 thoughts when I received it. Thought number one was like, this is really cool. Just like, yeah, you'd ask like, does anyone have help regarding a job or anything else in our lives? Like, I thought it was really cool you took that approach. I was like, yeah, this is really cool. My second thought was, like, I know you, but we're not, like, super close. So my second thought was like, oh, I wonder if she meant to include me in this. And it wasn't that I thought it was good or bad. I was just surprised that I got it because it seemed quite intimate. And then when you, about a year later, you sent a follow-up about your year after sending this. And yeah, it was interesting because you said it was the people who you didn't really know that well. They're the ones who set you up. And that was really interesting to me. And I wonder why that is. Also, I'm interested, the responses you got, were there any trends in terms of were they men, were they women, were they people who were in long-term relationships, was there an age? Maybe there wasn't any trend, but I'm wondering if there were sort of any patterns there in terms of the
I think the people
categories.
That were really critical of my approach were the ones who have struggled the most in relationship.
Yeah,
I did
well, it's
not
like
get any critique from people who are in loving, supportive relationships.
Well, it's like we judge in others that which we judge in ourselves, right?
Right.
So did it feel like they were projecting their own sort of difficulties onto you?
The ones that I knew well enough, yes. There were some that I didn't know that well that had responses like that, and I didn't even know where to start with them. You know, I went into the whole thing knowing that I was not going to take any response personally. You and I are both quite experimental people, and we're comfortable and uncomfortable situations. That's required for journalism. So I think that what struck me the most was how surprised people were that I did it. And I, to this day, almost 2 years later, would hope that more people are willing to step out on a limb and ask for help when it comes to love. I wrote a follow-up a year and a half later, especially in light of what had happened in America with the Me Too movement and with the changing conversation about sex, and especially in response to what had happened with Aziz Ansari, who I actually happen to think is one of the most experimental people willing to talk about love in America. And I think it's really sad that he's been criticized so much when he didn't get to respond as much as he could have. I don't know. I just had a lot of emotions this year, as many people did, and I wrote a follow-up piece explaining kind of what I had done, but also trying to touch on the notion that for thousands of years, people used to set each other up. This is not some new experiment.
But I think it's because we're in the age of romantic love, right? So people set each other up because, like, if you were a wealthier family, it was so that your land would, or your wealth would accumulate. Or being Middle Eastern, I guess there were just lots of strict rules on just who should be together and not. And I think maybe it's, I don't want to say the last 100 years because I don't want to be inaccurate, but it's this notion of romantic love, right? That, like, we get together for love rather than for strategic reasons?
It's the last 200 years. Mm-hmm. So let's get specific. Victorian era England is what actually really popularized the notion of romantic love. Mm. The Thomas Hardys, the authors that were popular here in the 1800s, as we sit in London, were the ones who popularized the notion of romantic love. I mean, look at Pride and Prejudice. And it's not to say that romantic love is a problem. And now I think about it, yeah, people were being set up for some reasons. I'm happy I'm not being set up today. But I think we have to strike a balance between acknowledging that romantic love doesn't necessarily always work for everyone, and that love does take work, and that the ways that people used to set up other people were more centered around maybe compatibility when it comes to class. But how do we blend the two approaches? I would really like to live in a world where we blend deliberate styles of measuring compatibility between partners and also cultivating a sense of romantic love. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Well, it's interesting. So, because our question is about the role friends can play. And just off of what you've been saying, I've often thought it'd be really cool to have, you know, one of these sort of like slightly interfering aunts. Like, always matching each other up. I always think that sort of character is quite interesting. And in a sense, it's like our friends and our loved ones are the people who know us the best, right? But why is there that hesitation with them getting involved? And I'm thinking about my own life. Like, I've had a few situations which have happened with friends of friends, and I've always super gotten on with the guy, and like a very sort of quick, seamless getting on. And because it makes sense, right? Like, if you're friends with one person, then it's likely that they're friends and you are gonna gel. But I have wondered, like, why is it that there is this hesitation with friends trying to get involved? A while ago, a friend of mine, someone who I think he has really good judgment, so he once asked me, he said, you know, hypothetically, if I knew someone who I thought would be a good match for you, would you be open to me introducing you to them? And I was like, yeah, sure, that's cool. And then he paused a little bit and he was like, yeah, he's just done some weird stuff recently and I just don't know if he's quite right. And in a way, it was quite nice, that hesitation, because, you know, this friend, he's trying to be protective and he's like, oh, I have high standards. So sometimes I don't know if it's that, if like we feel responsibility if we're close introducing two people, whereas if someone's a bit more distant, they're like, oh yeah, I just made a vague introduction, they can sort it out. But I do wonder, like...
I think you hit that on the nail. I think that people are afraid of confrontation or awkward situations. And oftentimes when you set friends up, especially if they're close friends, the potential for it to go awry keeps people from making the setup happen.
Yeah.
And I take issue with that, because I actually think there is a sense that your friends can't sort it out themselves. I think there's this like idea that, you know, if you set two people up and it doesn't go well, then you're gonna be stuck in the middle somehow, and that we're not fully formed adults who can like talk it through. Mm. I just actually don't think we have the language or the structures to make us comfortable to do that.
Yeah.
I've set multiple friends up. My best friend married the guy I set her up with. We were 21 when I found him for her. And I, you know, it was casual and it wasn't this like serious, serious thing. But I think that we as society could benefit from feeling more comfortable with the idea of helping each other out in the love department. And that would necessitate us coming up with new language and new types of vulnerable conversations to have if a friend set two friends up and it didn't work.
Yeah.
That means you just have to have a few extra conversations in advance, all parties involved, all three parties.
Yeah.
But I don't see us getting there for some reason.
Yeah. Have you had a scenario where either you've been set up or you've set some people up and it's been a problem?
Totally. Yeah. Last year, I set two people up and one of them blew the other one off. And I said something to the person who blew the other person off. And I said, can you have a little bit more integrity?
Yeah.
And that's all it took.
Yeah.
And he apologized.
Yeah.
So...
And I think people don't do that, because I've been in scenarios, not just in dating, but even in friendships where people have behaved badly and the mutual friends are all like, oh, I don't want to get involved. And like you say, that isn't I don't think it's a very adult approach. Like, conflict is going to happen. But I've often wondered if that's why people don't do this, setting their friends up, because they're like, oh, I want to stay out of it, you know?
What I'm more worried about is why we're not more concerned with the relationship status or the love status of the people that we spend our time with. I think a lot about depression. The depression rates in America are the highest they've ever been, at least since we've been measuring them. And I think a lot about the pressure on women to partner and think about their biological clock by a certain age. I don't know if I want my own kids, but I think that we're so quick to ask, how's work going? But we don't really ask in an authentic way, how are you feeling in love and with love? I know that recently I've had quite a few family members and some friends say, when are you going to meet someone? When are you going to meet someone? How can we help you? When are you going to meet someone? When the question I'm really looking for them to ask is, how are you feeling about love? How are you feeling about your relationship status? I don't feel like I can even have that conversation, honestly, with people in my life because they don't know how to ask the right questions. Yeah. And that's what I think about the most. How do we start to ask better questions and be less afraid to ask the right types of questions when it comes to love in our lives, romantic and non-romantic? Just the general feeling of, are you in love? To me, that should mean, are you in love with life? Are you in love with how you're changing and growing? Are you in love with your struggle? Are you in love with other people around you? Do you feel that you are connected? And I think that was the real intention behind my email, wanting to experience more levels of connection with other people.
Mm-hmm. So I showed your initial email and your follow-up to my co-host Jonathan and also our co-producers Johnny and Sam. And Johnny said that he was really impressed by the ask. He was like, this is a modern woman, this is really cool. She's asked for what she's wanted. But he said he wouldn't have felt the same way if it was a guy who had asked that. Like, he would have found it a bit, he said, desperate. And I thought that was quite interesting and also quite cool that he felt that. But I'm wondering, because still in society, I think it's still like a, even though as women we are more assertive than we've been before, I still feel there can be a bit of pressure not to be too assertive as a woman, and especially in terms of love. So how did that ever cross your mind, sending that out? Like, would it be different if it was a guy asking? And it was interesting when, you know, Johnny said that he would have found that desperate as a guy, because I was like,
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth noting, like, the email was long. It was incredibly long-winded, but this is how I am as a journalist. I'm an overwriter, and then I need editors to edit my work down, and I didn't have an editor on this email. But I tried to have a sense of humor in the email, and I made a playlist and
a dude board?
I did make a dude board. I made a Pinterest with a bunch of men that I find attractive. And by the way, it was like celebrities and musicians and actors and models. Like, it was meant to be a joke. Somebody told me that my dude board was a bit aspirational, and I could not believe that she had taken it seriously.
And it did seem fun. It was a serious thing, but it was also fun. There was a sense of joy to it.
Yeah, I didn't think about what somebody would think had a guy sent the same email, because I think a guy would have taken a different approach to the email.
In sending it?
Yeah. Okay. I think a man would have worded it differently. I think the words that heterosexual men use around love and partnership are different than the words that heterosexual women use around love and partnership, and I think that's worth noting. I'm trying to imagine what would have been different between a man sending the email versus a woman.
But that thought didn't cross your mind, that, you know, how is this going to come across given I'm a woman? And
no,
that's cool if it didn't.
It didn't.
Yeah.
I also feel like I have a lot of masculine tendencies as a woman. I'm pretty balanced in my masculine and feminine. And so I just don't happen to think about gender as often as I necessarily could. And I do think about gender in the workplace because I was subjected to a lot of bias, especially in media. But in regards to dating, I think that a man wouldn't necessarily have sent the email at all at 30 because he might not have felt the same pressures.
Huh. Okay.
So I think it's worth talking about why I sent it when I sent it.
Yeah.
And it was because over 50% of my friends are in long-term committed partnerships. especially the women. And I think a man wouldn't necessarily have sent this at 30. I think he might have sent it at 35 or 40. I think I sent it at 30 because I was conscious of the rhetoric around my biological clock.
Yeah.
And also being around people who are partnered and getting married.
Yeah, yeah. So Jonathan, my co-host, he said that he wanted to know about the differences between men and women helping their friends find love. He said that, "I called a buddy of mine to introduce him to a few fantastic women, and his first question was, why aren't you dating them? I knew he was going to ask." It's this very dude way of asking, what's wrong with her? Do women have a similar code?
Women absolutely have a similar code. To think that that is just unique to men is hilarious, actually. Jonathan, I find you very funny. I can't wait to meet you in person one day. Of course women have a code. I have a bunch of guy friends who I have not set up with other female friends of mine because of their behavior or because feeling like they're not compatible with certain female friends. I also think a lot of this is about timing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a saying in New York that guys are like yellow cabs. When the light goes on, it's the first woman that gets in the car. And I think that's so reductive, but it's also so correct sometimes.
But that's about a lot of things in life, right? It's like things happen when you're emotionally capable of dealing with them. Or, you know, when people say, oh, it will happen when it's meant to. I don't think that is necessarily some like vague woo thing. Like in everything, it's like, no, you're emotionally capable of handling X situation. Which
yeah.
is when that comes up, then you can handle it. So
yeah, I think that what he's getting at is that we judge our friends based on their behavior or based on how we perceive them to be behaving emotionally or actually. And I actually think it's really deeply problematic. When I've said to someone, oh, like, it's not a good time to meet this guy, I always hear myself saying that and say to myself, who am I to judge?
Right.
Also, why don't I have confidence in my friend, girl or guy, that they could sort this out on their own?
Well, I guess it goes back to this thing of maybe wanting to protect our friends. So it's not necessarily like from a bad place.
Yeah, but I think there's different levels of protection. I think it's one thing to protect somebody from something that's dangerous.
Right.
I think it's another thing to go so far as to say, like, I'm going to emotionally protect or shield my friend from an experience that actually might help them really grow.
Yeah.
And the people that set me up with people who absolutely fit the list I wrote in the email in terms of what I was looking for and how I was looking to feel in a relationship. What I'll say now is that, yes, that list is valid, but in learning about love and being in love over the last few years with a couple different people, oftentimes incredibly unexpected people, it's a heck of a lot more intuitive than you could put into words, than I could put into words.
We're looking at the role that friends can play in us finding love. In an ideal scenario, what role can friends play in that?
In an ideal scenario, friends talk more casually with each other throughout their friendships about love, about what they've learned in love, and about dating. It's the juiciest of material. It really is. So having a language by which we're more comfortable talking with each other about love and dating, and keeping a keen eye out, having a bit more peripheral vision around you for people that might be blessings to other people in their experiences in love and in life. What else is life about except for the people that we meet and the experiences that we have here while we're embodied on this planet? And just as much joy and power and beauty as I've gotten from being friends with people and having deep conversations like the one we're having, why can't friends be kind of like the key to the door that unlocks more experiences in love with other people? That's how I see it.
You heard from Erica Berger on this episode of The Gender Knot.
It was hosted by me. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And it was hosted by me. I'm Jonathan Freeman. Our co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell.
We'll be back next week with more. Bye for now.
Talk to you later.